Let's do this. It's Friday. It's Blaine and Mickey. We are on the air. I see blue sky out my window today. It is a fantastic day. Some of you have already started your weekend, I'm sure, but stick and stay with us for the next couple hours, and then 3HL for the three after that. We'll make your weekend even better. I'm a big Friday guy. As a kid, I don't remember having a favorite day of the week, but somebody, my son actually was the one who asked me, Dad, what's your favorite day of the week? And I said, Friday, without even thinking. So I'm a big Friday guy. So let's just go ahead and kick this thing off. Let's have a great time today. Buck Rising is going to join us fresh off of 3 hours on our radio airways here in just a few minutes. And Peter Burns in hour number two. If you've heard him on the SEC Network or any of the platforms where you hear Peter Burns, the dude is fantastic. So you can ask him about anything college-wise and you get great answers. So you may as well just stick and stay on the show for the whole 2 hours so you don't miss anything. We'll also call our shot at the end of the show. So if you've got a shot you want to call, tweet us anytime at Blaine and Mickey, or you can always call us. We'll take your shots. 615-737-1045. Blaine, I think.
Wait, before you start. Yeah, man. Why is Friday your favorite day? You didn't even elaborate for us there, Mickey.
I don't know, man. It just feels like a launching pad to something great, you know?
Oh, the weekend.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You and me still do the show on Zoom. I never leave my house. I may not leave this weekend. So my world is going to look the same as it does all the other days of the week. But, you know, get to hang out with the kids a little more, spend a little more time with the wife. And you're always good at reminding me and the listeners, you know, spend a little extra time with the significant other. Maybe watch something that they want to watch on TV, things like that. Just some love tips from the hitman. I'm trying to be better about that. My wife goes to bed really early. I go to bed really late, but I'm trying to do better, trying to be better.
Yeah. Through my all my years of wisdom. Yeah. I've got that recommendation to me and it has worked. And then you find yourself watching a show that you really don't watch. It was one of her shows. Then you start liking it, you know? So we're on this series now called, I think it's called Black Space. Pretty cool. You got to check it out on Netflix. It's pretty cool, but it's not something that I would have picked. And now I'm kind of all caught up in it and trying to sneak in some episodes while she sleeps. And then I'm trying to figure out how I can keep her from knowing that I watched it already, because it'll tell you how many you watched. And I'm like, dang, man, if I watch it, she'll know I've watched them, and she'll be like, why did you watch it without me? That was my show. So yeah, man, you always got to spend some extra time. But every day is a great day for me, just to get up every day and to breathe and enjoy the day is always a blessing at the same sense. And it's a blessing that, you know, the Titans now have Julio. That is a blessing, man. Woo, can't wait.
I think that Titans fans, I asked this question on the Blaine and Mickey Twitter, by the way, and I'm surprised people have answered the poll question with an answer, but I'm really surprised that more people haven't just responded with something. Here's the question we got out today. Now that you've seen Julio Jones in the two-tone blue and you've heard from him, what's the excitement level for you Titans fans? So I put three choices on there. Same as it was, pretty excited, or totally freaking out. So same as it was right now, 12%. Pretty excited, 46%. Totally freaking out, 42%. I want to tell you this. I thought it would be a lot more totally freaking out answers, but here's why I think. And Titans fans, you can call us, 615-737-1045. We had a caller yesterday or the day before. My Julio stuff's all starting to blend together in my head. But the guy called in and he said, who were those two guys that we got when Blaine was on the team? And remember, everybody was so excited. And the guy was legitimately trying to remember their names. And we said, Yancey Thigpen and Carl Pickens. He's like, yeah. He said, I remember thinking, boy, these guys, this is going to be amazing. And some Titans fans remember getting Randy Moss, and some remember getting Andre Johnson at the very, 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 very end of his career, or whatever the case may be.
Well, Randy Moss was last year too, so.
I think a lot of people are nervous that somehow this guy's that guy. I will say this.
Mm-mm.
We didn't go to practice yesterday. We were, you know, you get to send one person per radio outlet or TV outlet or anything. So I think Buck actually went for the station yesterday. So we weren't there, but we watched all those videos. Then we heard from the guy. Let me tell you something. This guy's built different. And I'm not taking anything away from any of those other guys with the careers they had, my gosh, Randy Moss just jumped right into the Hall of Fame. But he was at the end. This guy doesn't seem like to me like – I mean, he said, I'm still big. I'm still strong. Anybody who
– I'm still fast.
Yeah, anybody who thinks, you know, anything different, you just need to stick around. And I know we got that audio we can play coming up. But and watching that guy run, I went back and looked, Blaine. The last time he played was on December 6th of 2020. And hamstring stuff was what got him last year. And he said yesterday, I tried to come back too soon. And that's something that you talked about. This is a guy who just wants to play football.
Mm-hmm.
Came back too soon on a team that really was going nowhere. Here's the thing. On a bad hamstring, limping through a bad season. In his last game last year, he didn't play again after that. He caught six balls for 94 yards on one leg. On one leg.
What was his stats for the season? Because I think he only played like nine games. You know, and he admitted he, you know, and a lot of athletes do it. I've done it. And you play when you say, man, I'm gonna just give it a go for my teammates, and I think I owe it to them. And you think you can get it done and survive a game without making it worse. That's the goal. And then you rest it again for the next weekend. Unfortunately for him, those soft tissue injuries are, you know, things you can't really predict and you really don't know. So if you've never had one, you really feel like you can go until you go full blast. And you never push yourself to full blast till you're actually in a game. So, he said that was his fault, but I'm sure he has no regrets about it. And, with all those players you named from Thigpen, none of those guys were Hall of Fame players. I know Randy Moss, that was his last year, and he didn't even play anymore after that. So This guy is still in his Julio is still in his prime. Now, what people all could say, maybe he's starting to go on. He's up at the top of the peak, and he's starting to go down. Well, guess what? His down is still higher than everybody on this universe. On the universe now, playing in the NFL. I'm just telling you right now. So he's hovering, he was so far above, he's still hovering over the Pro Bowl players. He's still an elite guy. We may get him when he becomes just a Pro Bowl player. Well, that means you're still one of the best. So I would never question Julio. And we're getting him at a perfect time where he's really motivated and he's a little perturbed that even conversation is happening. And when you got that extra juice like that and a competitor like that he is, you want that in your locker room, on the football field all the time. So I'm not too concerned about it, really, to be honest. And if he gets injured, he gets injured. But, hey, man, this guy is just in the – I'm excited and pumped like everybody else about Julio Jones because he's just a phenomenal talent. Whenever, you know, you get on the team, you bring a lot of value to help all the other players in actual games and make their job a lot easier. But I'm still interested. All I've learned from you and about Vegas, I just took it to the football field in my mind, is how many wins will that give the Titans extra? How much value? Maybe he just makes the games they win easier. I don't know. But typically, you know, it may be one win, but most time it's quarterbacks who can actually change games in win-loss number. So maybe makes it more exciting to watch them. I'm interested to see because, man, right now Vegas says 9, and they got all those big buildings out there in Vegas. Those aren't dummies. They not ding-dongs. There's no ding-dongs out there with them big buildings. Dudes is brilliant. And not to say that they don't mess up sometimes too, but that's far in between. So I would say the Titans, maybe they win 10, 11 games now. And duplicate what they did last year with a better weapon and hopefully a better defense, but also a tougher schedule. So all things look better, but is the schedule tougher? Makes it all equal out and they win about, 10, 11 games.
I look at him as this. They averaged right at 31 points a game. I think it was 30.9 or 30.7 is what they averaged last year. With the addition of Julio, to me, and Taylor Lewan being healthy and AJ Brown getting his knees cleaned up or his legs. I can't remember. Remember he had two surgeries. He got cleanups. Which the average person would be, asking for thoughts and prayers on Facebook and not get out of the house for 8 weeks. But these are superhumans. So he gets two surgeries cleaned up, and he basically says, well, he's on anesthesia. Yeah, man, I wasn't right the whole year. Okay, so he's going to be right this year? And Tannehill is still Tannehill, and the King, he box jumped 54. Did you see that? His latest video?
That was a couple of days ago, right? I thought, because I didn't know. I said, who is that? Who in the heck is that? I said, man, he sure is tall. He must be a basketball player. And then he didn't have any shoes on. I said, man, he's got some huge feet. Man. And then he jumped up and he turned around and jumped down, and it was Derrick Henry. I go, oh my, this guy. We have two guys on the team. And Julio, both of them from the University of Alabama, and the King are just off the Richter scales on what they're doing at their size. I'm serious now. I mean, Henry has that breakaway speed for a guy that big. Usually got a guy like that, he's just a power back. When he gets on the field, you know, he's just a normal 4-5 guy. Not this guy. I mean, you know, freaking nature, Julio, that big and to get down on routes. And I told you, he runs routes like he's 5'11". Those these guys, it's impossible, man. And these guys are special talents, and they put in the work. That's the difference. So they don't rest on their laurels and just say, oh, I'm a great talent, I'm going to just be as good as I can be. Nope, these guys put in work. That's why they're going to have eventually Hall of Fame. They got all the measurables. They got the work ethic, and they got the mindset to be special. And when you got all those things together, all those guys equal to HOFers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can call it what you want, but regardless if they win or lose, you're going to be, you know, judged that way. They going to make it just because they got those intangibles with them, with that kind of, you know, gifted athletic ability and size. So, yeah, man, it's going to be a fun show. I you know what? To be honest, I really think Julio Jones, and then people are going to laugh at me, I really believe his impact is going to be in the playoffs. I mean, I think he's going to be good. Don't get me wrong. But you do brought up the stat, Mickey. You helped me make my decision. Corey Davis, 0 catches versus the Ravens. I'm putting money on that. That is never going to happen to Julio Jones. To be out there. I don't care who's guarding. He's going to be like, hey, man, you know, and he's not an aggressive nature guy. So he'll wait to come to the sideline, and Tannehill will go, hey, what you seeing out there? Well, what I'm seeing is throw me the ball. Hey, like they think they got me covered. I'm not covered. He's going to come with that, you know, modest, conservative voice of his. Oh, I'm not covered. So just throw it there. I'll get it. Well, meanwhile, I'll be sitting on the sideline like, hey, man, I'm open every play. I don't care where he's at. Just put it out there. I'll go get it. No, I'm open. Just throw it. Throw it over there. I'll get it. I'll find a way to get it. See these big claws I got? Yeah. See how tall I am? See that guy guarding me? He's only like 6 feet. Yeah, 6'1". Man, you know, he's got a, you know, I think a 37-inch vertical. Oh, I got 45. So just throw it up there. I got it. I'm a little faster than him, too. So, yeah. He would just say that. I'm just a little fat. Knowing he probably is a step faster in real time, that's a lot faster. So that's where I think the impact is going to be. I really do. Because that's when you're playing the elite teams, and you're going to have to stop the King and sell out to stop the run. And most teams don't have three corners, you know, two for sure on the outside. They can kind of manage that. So, yeah, I think the Ravens, I'll put my money on Julio against Peters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he'll probably get thrown out the game because he'd be frustrated that Julio is giving the business and quietly, and then go pat him on the butt. Good job, little buddy. Yeah.
In Julio's career, Blaine, 10 years.
You found a stat.
There's one game where he didn't get a catch, and he had 0 targets. It was 2011, which that was his rookie year, right? So that means something must have happened. Maybe he got hurt and left the game. He had no targets and no catches. That's the only time that's ever happened.
Well, I don't know Vegas, but I told those guys are smart. I'm putting money on that never going to happen. I don't care if he has 3 targets, 1 catch. And that one catch is going to be like 80-yard touchdown.
Well, we distilled it down last year. If the offense can score 31 a game, the defense needs 3 or 4 stops a game. That's it. That's all they got to do, because you're scoring 31 a game. can this revamp defense get that four stops a game? Because if it can, watch the heck out. That's what I got to say.
Well, that better happen with all the geniuses they got in the room now.
Yeah, oh, they got no shortage of geniuses.
Schwartzy, Vrabel,
Haslett.
I mean,
we haven't even mentioned the DC, Bowen.
Right. Yeah, Bowen. I think there was a little meddling in. I think that's what the head coach can do. I think the head coach is going to be hands off and let him stay in the flow and call the game and come up with the game plan the way he wants to. It takes time to do that. I bet you that was going on. And this year we'll get to see, they'll have a little rhythm and let him call it. Not to say that, Vrabel still won't call, some big plays in certain situations, but kind of let your guy go and trust in him. It's hard. You're trying to be a micromanager. Well, ask all those CEOs in the companies that have had a lot of success. They let those people do their jobs. That's why you hired them.
No doubt.
Do their job.
Lucas is doing his job. He tells us we got to take a break because Buck is just chomping at the bit to get on the show. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Buck Rising, we know he's excited about Julio. We'll get his thoughts next. Blaine and Mickey, Friday, 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Got our weekly visit with Buck Rising coming up. He is apparently driving to Cleveland to go to a wedding. I've been to Cleveland. We know that Blaine's been there. He scored a touchdown, ran up on a snowbank, and got showered with beer after pick-sixing Eric Zier. Well, you were shaking people's memories loose yesterday because people start talking about Cleveland quarterbacks. I don't know how many people are going to hit on Eric Zier, but he was there for a minute. He was the starter. He had him a little NFL career through a touchdown pass of the hitman.
Yeah, I had to think about it for a second who it was, too, because I was like, was it Vinny Testaverde? No, it was Eric Zier because he was a young quarterback. I disguised the coverage and snuck down. And like I was playing two deep and played cover three, and I was in the curl flat area, and he threw it almost right to me. Got a young ding-dong.
How big did your eyes get when that ball was coming towards you? Because you had to know, if I catch this, I can score.
Oh, man, my eyes got real big, and I said, breathe and relax. I was like, oh my God, he threw it. Oh, just breathe and relax. Cause I was an intense player and it'll drop right there in my hands. I said, I want to make it feel like I'm catching out of the jugs machine.
Oh no.
And I did not drop that one. So that was one. I still had some really good fingers and wrists and forearm at the time. So they were still healthy, young in my career.
Buck Rising joins us now. Buck, Blaine was relating his pick six off of Eric Zier in Cleveland. You are going to Cleveland right now. What all is included in your plans? Do you plan on getting a shower of beer like Blaine did in the end zone in front of the dog pound?
No, I haven't been to Cleveland since the Titans just straight beat them down in the 2019 opener. So it will not be as exciting as either Blaine's experience or the 2019 Titans. But, I'm going to go get drunk at my cousin's wedding. So it's about as good as it gets.
Oh, fair enough. You're not having a bachelor party or anything like that? When is the wedding? Tomorrow?
Yeah, the wedding's tomorrow. I'm not in the wedding, Blaine. I'm just going to the wedding.
Oh, okay. I thought you'd be, pretty. Man, so all your friends now are getting married, man. I don't want to put any pressure on you, but where are you getting married? Have you given the date yet, or are you going to announce it on our show and not your show? Nah.
Blaine says, I don't want to put any pressure on you, but when are you getting married? You sound like these salespeople trying to sell me a jewelry endorsement just so I could ask Sarah to get married. Unbelievable. Both of you. Out of here.
Yeah, man. Only for you, Buck. Only for you.
Yeah, man. We're just trying to look out for you like your work uncle should.
Well, we wanted you to feel as excited as all the fans are, man. So how was the excitement since, you kept us from going to watch Julio and you got to go? What was the excitement like?
I mean, I was talking about it earlier on the show, Blaine. I honestly haven't seen that kind of juice, for lack of a better term, around anything Titans related since Tom Brady was here for joint training camp practices. He is he's an extraterrestrial. He's a different species. He seems to be healthy. at 32 years old and went through all of the individual drills, the 7-on-7, the 11-on-11, understanding that they're not in pads right now. I mean, he's a marvel to watch, and it was noticeable in the way that the players were reacting to him. It was noticeable in the way that everything media-wise gravitated towards him. There was energy at a voluntary June off-season workout yesterday that there should never be, no matter what the circumstances are. But it was really, really cool to see. And I think, I mean, Blaine, you can speak to this better than I can, but people overhype themselves about signings all the time, and one OTA does not mean that he's going to be an incredibly successful player for the Tennessee Titans. But damn sure he was everything he was billed to be when just getting the opportunity to watch him work. And that was palpable throughout the practice facility yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Along with Buck Rising from the Buck Rising Show and A to Z Sports here on 104.5 The Zone. I guess, you know, the thing that everybody's getting to know about Julio that I know, and then I think you know that you should turn down your radio because I can hear myself echoing there, Buck.
Oh, my bad, Blake. You're on the car phone. I'll switch over.
Is that Julio, even with all his talents and everything else embodied in what his measurables are, he's a team guy. So what stood out to you in the pressers and some of the things that he was talking about in his answers that you guys all were asking him?
So I think the biggest thing to me was, you know, I mean, it's easy for anybody to say, I'm not a stats guy, I'm a wins guy, and that's all well and good. But he was open to the idea that he may not see the bulk of targets like he's accustomed to seeing in Atlanta for the better part of a decade, because it was a necessity. The offense had to go through Matt Ryan and Julio Jones for them to be able to be successful. Here in Tennessee, it's going to be much different for obvious reasons between A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry and all the other people that they have to distribute the ball to. But I think the biggest thing that I kind of took away from it was, you know, the idea that everybody's talking about, you know, Julio or A.J. Brown wants to play with Julio Jones. A.J. Brown wants to play with Julio Jones. The Titans players want to play with Julio Jones. And Julio, you know, sit there and looked at us in the Zoom and said, yeah, what he doesn't know is I want to play with him too. The organization has become a bit of a destination, and not just because Julio came here, but even in the last offseason, understanding the Clowney experiment failed pretty spectacularly, he was going to a place where he thought he would be in the best position to win, not just get paid, but to win. And that is something that I would not think that I would have said about the Titans 5 years ago when I got here, that they're the place where people are coming to ring chase.
Well, someone who's going to get lost in the shuffle, and it may benefit him to a certain extent, and that's another receiver, which is Reynolds, that was signed. So he went from number 2 to number 3. How did he seem, I guess, as far as the addition of Julio Jones and his role changing from 2 to 3?
You know, I think he's still preparing to, you know, relish the opportunity, because, you know, when we talk about his role changing, Blaine, he played more snaps at slot than any Titans receiver on the roster last year. The Titans receiver who had the most snaps in the slot last year was not Adam Humphries because of injuries, so maybe that result would have been different had he been able to stay healthy and away from the concussions. But it was Corey Davis. So the role that Josh Reynolds was talking to us in his initial Zoom when he got signed here, that Josh Reynolds was coming in to fill, is Corey Davis's role. So he may not be wide receiver 2 in title, but he is a very good fit for the role that he was initially coming here to fill. I don't think his responsibilities changed that much. And I think he's aware of that. I think the coaching staff has made him aware of that. Based on our conversations with him yesterday, he seems comfortable with where it is. It's all going to benefit the entirety of the passing game in the long term. He's obviously in a different situation because he's on a low-cost, one-year deal, and he's looking for opportunity. Now, the opportunities will be less than when he initially signed here, but it's not like it's not going to be for the benefit of the team as a whole. And I think Josh Reynolds recognizes that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I completely agree. And I, to add to that, Buck, I just think that they're going to move all the receivers around. I think that's something Todd, you know, Donnie's going to do to, change and put his stamp on this offense, because that causes more problems than anything else for the defenders, not knowing where they're going to line up. Not to say they're going to do it at the beginning, but as time evolves, I think you're going to see some guys, Julio in the slot, Reynolds outside, A.J. Brown in the slot. I mean, I think they're going to move them all around once everybody's comfortable with the offense. We're on with Buck Rising from the Buck Rising Show.
So, Buck, I know this is something you've discussed. I heard Coach Mack on with you earlier. He talked about the offensive line and how they will benefit. But who do you think benefits the most from the addition of Julio?
I mean, if I'm being honest, it's the fan base. Like, I know you're looking for an on-the-field answer. And I get, I mean, if you're asking me on the field, I mean, I think the obvious answer is Tannehill. You go from having A.J. Brown as your primary receiver to now having two incredibly talented options where you can just largely take more chances on 50-50 balls and toss it up because you know those guys are going to win in contested coverage. But the real winner here is Titans fans. Man, I haven't seen this kind of energy, this kind of excitement about anything since I've been down here over the course of, it'll be 6 years in August and 5 years covering the team. If there was any chance that Nissan Stadium wasn't going to be full for the Arizona Cardinals season opener, signing Julio is a massive marketing win. It's a massive energy boost to the fan base. Now they have something to sit and wait and marinate with over the course of the summer when these guys go on break until they come back for training camp. And it's only going to exacerbate the excitement about Titans football. I mean, I Rep Ryan was in the studio with me yesterday, and we were talking about they're picking up new Titans radio affiliates just because this dude's on the team. That hasn't happened since Marcus Mariota with a Honolulu affiliate in Hawaii because of Marcus's background. So the winner on the field is Tannehill. The winner off the field is 100% this fan base.
So Tannehill restructured. He may be the biggest winner. He also got some money in his pocket a little earlier, but his restructure gave the Titans not only enough money to sign Julio Jones, there's a little bit of a surplus of cash. What move do the Titans need to make now? Do they need another tight end? Do they need something else? Or do you kind of hold on to that money and wait to see who becomes available maybe once cuts start to happen and camps are underway?
I mean, honestly, Mick, I don't think that, because I understand what you're talking about. They freed up about $18 million in cap space with the restructure, and they only needed 15.3 for Julio. Plus, they got money back on Kevin Johnson, like we talked about last week, and they had 3.9 that they were sitting on anyway. It amounts to just under $10 million, but the reality of the situation is they not all the rookies are signed yet. You still have Monty Rice and Elijah Molden who will need their contracts done. Rashad Weaver signed yesterday. You still need a pool of money for injured players that you can have during the season to replace, so you can't just straight up spend to the cap in free agency. And you need to have so you need about between $6 and $9 million for that alone, depending on how many resources you're going to allocate towards that. And then you need probably at least $3 million for a 16 man in theory until the league approves it. It's 10, but if we're to operate under the assumption that things are trending towards another 16 man practice squad, you need about $3 million for your practice squad. So I understand why people are looking at that money and saying, oh, we can still add people. But the reality of the situation is you need those resources for moves that are decidedly less sexy, but necessary for the sustainability of the team throughout the course of the season.
Buck Rising joining us now, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, home of the non-commissioned salespeople. Also, not just with us here at the Zone, but also on A to Z Sports Prime Time in the 615 sessions. He joins Blaine and me this time every Friday.
Yeah, Buck, I guess I really only have one question here, and that is, who is Marcus Johnson? Since I haven't been out at practice, I think he was with the team last year. He caught three TDs at practice. Is this true?
That is true. Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers are the two like forgotten men in the middle of all in all this wide receiver conversation. Uh-huh. In talking to Rhett Bryan about, you know, guys who are on the bubble but do have a shot to contribute, Marcus Johnson's name came up, and then Tommy Hudson, who's a tight end who was suspended for PEDs last year, also a practice squad player. I think there's going to be legitimate competition, which is what they brought guys like Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers and Fred Brown in to do, to try and round out this wide receiving core with as diverse a skill set among these guys as humanly possible. Now, the thing that they obviously lack, that Marcus Johnson is a possession receiver at his best, and certainly he performed well in the red zone drills yesterday, but they don't have straight line speed at that point. That's not Marcus Johnson. That's not what he's going to provide. But you do have an interesting player who has been with the team, who understands the schematics of the offense, who worked with Tannehill a good deal last year during the time that he spent on the team. And of course, they keep the practice squad players separated from the team when he was on the practice squad once he got added. But he has familiarity with the players and with the offense. And he shouldn't be discounted, even though, you know, he's not Julio Jones. So nobody's talking about him. But he's definitely going to be pushing for this fifth or, depending on how many wide receivers they choose to carry, this fourth or fifth wide receiving spot. Amongst a variety of different dudes with a variety of different skill sets and all shapes and sizes at this point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm a big Chester Rogers fan too, as well. I like him a lot too. Haven't seen him in a while, but I think he's a different, smaller guy that can also return punts. One more question and one more Julio question is, and it's the thing I keep bringing up the most, as much as I'm excited like you and all the fan base and everybody else, with the addition of Julio Jones and what he could bring to the table, how many wins do you think he adds to the team by being on the team? This is more a Vegas question, but that's what made me think about it. He's not a quarterback. He may make those wins a little easier, but does he help them get extra wins by being on the team?
You know, Blaine, that's a really good question, because I don't necessarily think so, right? Like, I mean, we've seen this as a trend for a long time now. Like, high paid wide receivers aren't necessarily indicative of like win success. They don't translate to wins in the way that you might think that they do, and certainly commensurate with what they're paid. I think with the Julio Jones situation, if you're believing in the Titans now, after Julio Jones signed with the team, it's not because you outright believe that Julio Jones is going to be the difference maker. I think people are looking at that incorrectly. I think that's more of a belief in Ryan Tannehill and his ability to kind of distribute the ball, not get caught up in a way like a Baker Mayfield might with Odell Beckham Jr., where you see him become a more efficient player with Odell off the field because he's not so focused on getting the ball to his star player. I think you're trusting in Ryan Tannehill to be able to elevate this team further with an upgrade at the wide receiver position, going from Corey Davis to Julio Jones. I don't necessarily think Julio Jones is not going to help them. He's not going to win them the Super Bowl, but he's sure as hell going to help get them through the regular season, the expanded regular season, and certainly the expanded postseason at this point, and should with above average quarterback play, because statistically it's Aaron Rodgers, it's Patrick Mahomes, and it's Ryan Tannehill the last 2 years since he's been inserted into the offense. So you're buying the quarterback and his ability to utilize the wide receiver more than you're buying the wide receiver elevating the team itself.
Well said by the man with the pipes, Buck Rising.
Well, or Buck's many imitators as well. He has people imitating him on the internet now. So maybe we could even sneak one of them in one Friday as well, just to fill in for Buck if he has more weddings or anything else he needs to do. But Buck, great job today. We know you're driving to Cleveland. I hear it's beautiful this time of year. We want you to have a great time. You know, be safe, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It's the only time of year that Cleveland's beautiful, and these people can impersonate me as long as they want, as long as they don't get my paycheck. It's the only thing I care about. See you, boys.
All right, Buck Rising.
Man, be safe.
We care about you, Buck. Yeah, there's a whole host of Buck Rising impressions out there, one by a guy named Bart, which he really seems to have nails Buck's pacing and all that kind of stuff. We can find that. We'll retweet it from Blade and Mickey. Really good stuff. More good stuff coming up. It's a special quarterback's birthday. He's 65, but Blaine played against this guy. He's one of the GOATs.
Oh.
And Blaine got to see him up close and personal. Maybe a little story, a little football time, a little story time with the Hitman next. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5. So. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5, The Zone. Appreciate you hanging out with us, getting your weekend started. Vandy right now, bottom of the eighth, leading East Carolina 2-0. What an amazing pitcher's duel this game has been. Kamar Rocker went 7 1/3, I believe, at 10 strikeouts. East Carolina starting pitcher also wound up going 7-3 at 13. And it's been a pitcher's duel, but Commodores finding a way to scratch out a couple of runs in a tough game. Two on, two outs right now in the bottom of the eighth. Again, the Commodores batting. They have scored a run in this inning. All right, that eighth inning just ended, so they'll go to the ninth. Vandy up 2-0 in this one. You don't have to go anywhere. We'll keep you posted on what happens. Tennessee will start their super regional action tomorrow. Six SEC teams continuing into this next round of NCAA baseball tournament play. Tennessee and LSU, the only two SEC teams that will face each other. So you're going to lose one of them via some SEC on SEC crime. That when that series gets underway tomorrow night, that's going to be fun too. Tennessee flat out getting it done. This state college baseball right now. Trevecca with an amazing run. Shout out to them. Tennessee, Vandy both making a run. Vandy kind of accustomed to getting this far. A little bit newer territory for Tennessee fans, but Tony Vitello probably about to get a big addition to his bank account and probably about to get a whole new upgrade on facilities and going to have some more pay for the assistants. And he looks poised for a long, long run at this baseball thing. All right, I tease this on the other side. Today is the great Joe Montana's birthday. I cannot believe Joe Montana is 65 years old.
What?
65. Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I can't believe he's that much older than me, like 20 years.
I know. And you still played against him because he played so long.
Good Lord. But
I've asked you about this stuff before. And sometimes just we as fans, we get caught up in, oh, my gosh, that's Joe Montana. And I've asked you this a couple of different times to ask you. And then years later, I ask you again. And you're like, yes, I mean, I know that's Joe Montana. But I'm on the same field he is. I'm playing in the same league he is. I can't look at him like that's Joe Montana or he's going to throw one over my head to Jerry Rice. I just got to play the game like he's any. I mean, you have to respect him and I'll let you explain your own words. But I said I would have been out there freaking out. Oh, my gosh, I'm playing against Joe Montana. You said you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, you get over that once you line up on the field and this is your first time versus anybody. I mean, like as soon as you know, you got to look at him as like I'm on the field. I belong. So you're trying to prove something. So that kind of. It goes out the window, but it happens immediately, and not every time you play somebody new or somebody you looked up to as growing up. Is that first game, that real live game? Naturally, I didn't play Joe Montana, as you said, at the end of his career when he's with the Chiefs. But I was that way when I played Jerry Rice my first time, my first start in the NFL on Christmas Day, my rookie year. That was a little nerve wracking there, man. I'm not gonna lie. My legs were shivering like it was cold outside. It wasn't cold in San Francisco. Not at that time. It was hot. Joe Montana, man, he's a tough son of a gun, a phenomenal player. I mean, we really, in the playoffs there, my rookie year, only time I think was his last year in the league. He beat us by himself, man. And I thought we, myself included, pretty much knocked him out of the game because he was, his elbow was swollen, his throwing elbow. Yeah. We had hit him and sacked him multiple times there against the Chiefs and with the Oilers. And he came out the second half. I don't know what he did. He took a wonder pill or a shot or something because he was a totally different player in the second half. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I thought they were going to have to carry him out on a stretcher. We were getting him that good. I mean, this guy has to be one of the toughest son of a you know what ever. I mean, man, he came out. And I mean, he just started winging it all over the place, and we were like baffled.
Wow.
Next thing you know, we barely lose, and he moves on. I think he lost the next round to the Broncos and Elway and those guys. So that's what I love about my career is I got to play against some of those
elite, high-level Hall of Fame guys at the end of their careers. Still got a chance to play them at the beginning of my career, my first year in the league. So that was pretty cool because I got to play against Elway, too. So, and Dan Marino, right?
Yeah. So that he threw the ball that whistled, right, Dan Marino?
Dan Marino had the strongest arm. Hey, by the way, Dan Marino, it seemed like he was a freaking middle linebacker out there. And when I say that is, he'd be barking at his teammates at the line of scrimmage where I could hear him in almost the whole stadium. It was crazy. Nobody was like that. But, Joe Montana was a special guy. And if you saw him on the street, you'd be like, that's Joe Montana, a slightly built guy. Ooh, man, you say he's a football player, really good athlete, precision, precise thrower. But he was just a special, special person, really, at the end of the day. Because when you look at, like, Elway, Marino, and their talents, can't match up to their talents. But when they got on the field, he did match up with them. But when you just, like, let's throw it around the yards, who has the strongest arm and who could throw it the furthest, he wasn't going to be on that list. Boy, he hit them in stride. He hit them right where they needed it. So, yeah, I think that was Willie Davis actually caught a one-hand touchdown on the killer, Chris Dishman, for the win. Yeah, that's how we lost. And that was like the only catch he had. Killer shut him down, except for that play. And he put it only where Willie Davis could get it. The next year we signed Willie Davis. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I'm pissed. Still at Willie Davis for that catch. Hey, man. Besides that team that was that we lost to the Ravens, that was the best team I was ever on. That team
was loaded. Yeah.
It was loaded. We had the freak before the freak in Lamar Latham. Oh, my gosh. You talking about a big, fast dude.
Yeah.
Jeez. I was just happy to be in the mix. Yeah,
great team, best uniforms in the game too, man. I miss those uniforms.
You love those uniforms, didn't you?
I love them. I love them. You got to wear them. I got all excited one day. You know, Kevin Dyson was an Oiler for 1 year, and he goes, "You can pump the brakes." He said, "We wore white jerseys every game in 1998 when Dyson was a rookie." I said, "That's not possible."
They were trying to get rid of love to your blue, blue colors because that was kind of historically that was the Houston Oilers, so. And only rightfully so that when you get here in Tennessee that they have their own colors and develop their own brand and exactly what it did.
Well, I miss the Love You Blue for sure. It's a great account on Twitter that I follow, and that guy tweets about the Oilers.
I do too.
That dude is the best, that Love You Blue. But I think he's
Bud's Oilers. I wish I knew who that guy was. I don't know who that guy was.
He tweets about you sometimes.
Yeah, he tweets at me. He tweets a lot about me. I feel like I should have him on the payroll.
We got to find out who he is. We'll have him on the show sometime. All right, Lucas is giving us the sign. We got to take a break. We come back hour number two. Stick and stay because Peter Burns will be joining us in about 20 minutes from the SEC Network. We're going to talk some baseball. We're going to talk some playoff. We're going to talk a bunch of stuff with Peter Burns, and you don't want to miss it. Headlines next. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone.